Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
And we're out here in beautiful Oakland, California, talking to artist, educator, seer. Do you want to add?
Writer. Apprentice crone.
Imagineer. Anne Walsh. Okay, we were talking a little bit ago about Southern California. And are you from Southern California?
It depends on how long you have to live somewhere in order to consider yourself from there, right? But no.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in New York City.
Oh, right on. Were you born in New York?
In New York City Women's Lying In Hospital.
Oh, wow. Holy shit.
Okay. Isn't that a weird name? Wow. That might be like an old-fashioned name for the maternity ward. I don't know.
Yes. I have no idea what hospital I was born in. Maysoon, what hospital were you born in?
In Chicago.
Okay, sure enough. That's all I got. I don't even know. I was born in Somerville, New Jersey.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. You recently put a book out that is related to a surrealist novel called The Hearing Trumpet, and I was reading a little blurb about that novel and what it's about, and it's like, okay, you know, because you did the whole project, but the crazy thing to me was that the lady... Okay, so she can't hear. Oh, yeah, will you say the name of the author?
Leonora Carrington.
That's right. And so anyhow, and so this woman is deaf, right?
Yeah.
And she gets a hearing trumpet. That's that like horn thing you put in, right?
Yeah.
And then here's her family saying that she's going to be institutionalized, but then come to find out that like the buildings are birthday cakes and like igloos and stuff. And there's like a bee. Can you talk about that?
It sounds great.
It is.
Maybe it's not supposed to be. It sounds amazing to me.
Well, did you find out about that author from this book, or were you aware of her for other reasons?
She's better known as surrealist is the term that is like the go-to term for her work, and it's partly because she was really closely associated with a lot of European surrealists before she moved to Mexico City in the early 40s. But yeah, she's definitely better known as a painter. So I knew of her paintings as a young artist and actually as a college student, I guess. But I heard about her book, The Hearing Trumpet, from the art historian Susan Aberth and the artist Amy Silman, who told me about that book like maybe around 2003 or something like that. Susan is, you know, really until very recently, like the one art historian who in some ways kind of penetrated Leonora Carrington's privacy and wrote the only monograph that existed about her for quite some time called Surrealism, Alchemy, and Art. I forget what the full title of that book is. But anyway.
And so that novel was written and finished in 1950 and then published like 20 years later.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Like, I don't think Leonora can say exactly when she wrote it, but it's supposed that it was around 1950. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then it wasn't published till 76.
Yeah. And then now, she's passed away, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
But she was living in Mexico City.
Yeah. 2011. Listen to you.
I have the dates. Dang. She died when she was 96. Amazing.
Yeah.
And you like hung out with her.
I did.
You met her. That's kind of amazing.
I did.
Did you meet her before this whole project started, or was she kind of like the impetus to the project?
No, I went to her. I went to her because I had read the book and I knew Susan and I basically asked Susan to introduce me to her. And I wanted her to collaborate with me on a film version of the Hearing Trumpet. But really what I wanted, like the most that I could imagine, since I'm not really a like narrative fiction filmmaker at all, was that I would get her to make a film of casting actors for the character of the narrator of the book. She's a 92-year-old lady that Kate was just talking about, who is very hard of hearing and very proudly bald and, you know, hunchbacked and hairy-chinned and, you know, unapologetically decrepit. And she narrates the book, and she, it's really her story, and the story that, and the story of the other old ladies who live in this home where her son and daughter-in-law send her to live. So wait, how did I get to that? Oh yeah, her name's Marion Leatherby.
Right.
Yeah. And so,
what a name.
Isn't that good? Right? Good, so name. Good. Yeah. So I thought, like, and this is, I guess, really pretty consistent with my own prior work. Like, the most I could really imagine was that, like, Leonora and I would, we'd make a movie about casting that character, and we'd watch actors audition for the part. And in my mind, I would see Leonora turn into a casting director, essentially, and me too, I suppose. And we'd watch, in particular, we'd watch younger women play much older women. And that was, I think, the thing that I was most interested in, was like, you know, what does Leonora see, and what is she looking for in someone playing that character? So that's what I went and, like, I basically asked her. I didn't tell her all the details of what I wanted to do, but she said no. I mean, it actually really, really, she said, did I write that? And I, you know, I had my copy of the book, and she said, you know, I haven't read that in a long time. And
was that one of her first early books, or?
She had already, I think she, I actually don't know right now, but I think she already had published a collection of short stories by then. She's probably better known for some of her short stories than for that novel, too. Yeah. But, you know, when you say, like, it's so amazing that I met her, I mean, my experience was that it wasn't that hard to get into the inner sanctum. I mean, I think, you know, in fact, I think one of the things that was sort of, that I actually talk about a little bit in the book, is just how mildly embarrassing it was to realize that there was a kind of steady stream of people like me
coming to meet
her. You know, interested in her and kind of wanting to, like, have a little brush with the greatness of the master, you know, and also a kind of, like, shiver of proximity to her, like, her relationship to that history, that, you know, and listen to her reminisce about people. And anyway, so I think also a lot of what my book tries to be honest about is just how what it felt like to think like, oh, I'm there's a lot of me out there, you know.
Yeah,
people that want a piece of an artist.
Yeah,
you know. And I mean, maybe my version of it was unique. Everybody's version is unique. But, I mean, mine definitely had something to do with that she was an old lady, and that she was writing about old ladies, and that I was all of a sudden interested in trying to find a model for being an old lady that I could tolerate. You know? That I could fucking deal with.
Yeah.
And the book had really offered me that.
What were the missing pieces of old ladiness that needed to be, like, filled in?
Subversiveness. Oh, okay. Like I said, being unapologetically decrepit. What else? Not giving a fuck. And I mean, it's pretty homosocial too, the community that it's really all women. Mm-hmm. I mean, the male characters in the book are mostly either kind of comically inept or devious or else sort of grandiose and like adorably faggy.
Was she queer?
Leonora?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'd like to think that she, I'd like to think that she had had, you know, some tastes of delicious sapphic life, but I don't, I think she was mostly into dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So wait, so okay, so you had the plan to be like casting directors with her, but it didn't
happen. I had the fantasy. It didn't, okay. It didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but you did do like, didn't you do like a dance class at, with like elders?
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's like, now I want to know about that.
Well, wasn't that part of the show at the luggage store?
It was.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, like one of the sort of chapters. I mean, I think I've ended up feeling like, okay, I didn't make the movie, but I've been kind of making this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you've been working my life. For the listeners, you've this has been like on your mind for 10 years, right?
It has.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I first went to visit her in 2008. So, yes. Yeah, I think I started to finally accept that maybe I wasn't going to make the Hearing Trumpet adaptation, but that I already was making the Hearing Trumpet adaptation, and that that was this series of exhibitions and writings that I was doing and these cast lists that were kept coming up, coming out of me over those years. And then occasionally making things like this music video, basically. I think I was still sort of imagining, okay, I'm gonna find some elder actors and then maybe we'll start devising some scripts and we'll film them. And mm-hmm. as I was looking around for actors, I discovered there was this organization right by my house called Stagebridge mm-hmm. that is an elder theater arts organization. And they happened to be offering a summer camp. And if you were 50 or over, you could enroll in the summer camp. And I was 52. And so they were teaching a musical theater class.
That's awesome.
That where they were going to teach the song Let It Go from Frozen.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I forgot about that.
Well, the thing was that this 50-year-old, me, Ann Walsh Jr., had a 4-year-old at the time.
So it was perfect. Or was it?
No, it was great because I had already gone on that long arc of like first thinking a song is just insufferable. Well, first being fascinated because like every 4-year-old on the planet was singing obsessed. It. Exactly. Yeah. And then like actually hearing it and thinking like, well, actually this song's kind of, it's just kind of epic and
oh, yeah.
and it's you know, it's really very moving song. And then so I knew the song really well. And then my question was like, why would you teach that song in that situation? Mm-hmm. Elders, you know. But then I was like, I'm fucking filming that. I'm gonna take that class and I'm gonna film it. And so I did. I mean, I took the summer camp, I enrolled in the summer camp and I just shot whatever I could with my iPhone, and then they were going to offer it again in the fall for like a full semester. And I asked the organization if they would let me approach the class about filming it every week. And so every single week I went with a camera person, a really great local filmmaker named Shalise Haas, and we filmed the class and me in it, and then I made a couple videos of that.
When you're going to go do something like that, do you face some resistance?
In myself?
No, from the people you're asking to shoot, to film.
You know, I thought I would.
And they were just like, yeah, come on by.
Well.
Because I just would wonder, well, like, what do you throw out
I
to,
felt
like
how do you talk about it? How do you explain
like, it? Like, I am a professor at UC Berkeley.
Yeah,
so.
I'm like, how do I gain there?
Yeah. Trust I mean, I'd be sex. Throwing that out every day.
I think I no, I just explained it as like, I love the way you give her the mic, like Mason, and then she laughs. I actually just said I have been kind of living this, like, I've been living this book, and I've been thinking about how to bring it to life for a really long time, and here's another way I want to do that. Like, I really explained exactly what I just explained to you. I was like, this is book, and it's really great, and I actually think it's really, you know, ahead of its time, and it's, would you be willing to do that? And they said yes.
That's wild.
I mean, a few of the people said they thought they were better when Shalice was there. Oh, yeah.
With the pressure of an audience.
Yeah.
They're actually performing.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah.
Also, are you a twin?
I am a twin.
Mm-hmm. What? You are?
Yeah.
Does your twin live out here?
Mm-hmm.
What if we've seen her?
It's a guy, right?
It's a brother.
Okay.
How do you know that?
I heard you talk about it at UC at the Berkeley Art Museum when you were talking about tennis.
You're talking about you read off of The Doorstop.
Oh, about Billie Jean King?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's...
We have that wedge in our living room.
You do?
I see it every day.
You want to talk about that piece a little bit?
Sure.
Okay.
You mean for our listeners?
Yeah, for the listeners.
Since we're just
full of shit.
Well, listeners. Why don't you guys describe it, actually?
I'm recording.
I'd love to just hear
I know it. Do you have the entire thing memorized to just recite it?
No.
Okay, well, it's a letter, right?
I have one in the other room.
I remember everything. It's a letter you wrote to Billie Jean King as a child.
Yes.
But lost, right?
Send it in the mail.
And so you had to kind of re-put it together as an adult.
Right.
For the thing quarterly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also that it was a doorstop to leave the door open for the next woman.
For sure.
Yeah.
For any woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's an orange rubber wedge.
Yes.
It's heavy. It's like a big piece of cheese.
Yeah, it's really good. It really will keep a door all the way open.
And I needed doorstops at the time. And the assignment from the thing was to make a household object that had text.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let's start with my own needs.
Yeah.
Did you get a bunch?
I did.
From the thing?
I did.
So you got it all covered now with your doors.
I have one everywhere I need. I mean, I don't really want to be like showy about my own.
Your own orange. You're like, here's another wedge.
I do use it. I do use it to keep my bedroom door.
Yeah.
Actually, I use it to keep it ajar.
Wait, I want to go back to Billie Jean King really quickly. Because I saw on the thing's website that she actually has one of the wedges.
Did you know that? Are you just learning that right now?
Did I know that?
Did you meet her? Was this another legend that you got to meet?
No, I didn't. What the heck? I didn't meet her, but my friend Julie was playing music on an Olivia cruise.
Wow. Lesbian cruise.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And Julie was going to be going on this cruise, playing music on this cruise that Billie Jean King was like the headliner speaker on. And I asked her to take one to Billie Jean King, and she did. And Billie Jean King sent me photos of her with it. And an email. And I really felt like it was like a moment of like completion where I felt like my job on this earth is complete, you know?
Oh yeah. I've had that feeling.
Ready. I'm ready to go.
Wow.
Made me so happy.
Oh my God.
Really did.
Did she remember your letter?
I don't know if she ever saw it, but my daughter wrote a fan letter to Beyonce recently.
Wow.
And I do think that she sees that doorstop. She knows what that doorstop is.
Yeah.
She, and that made me feel really like when she wrote the letter to Beyonce. I was really like, oh.
Did you like take a picture of it or photocopy it, or were you just...
The Beyonce letter?
Yeah.
To tell you the truth, I have it here, but I... It's completely...
Should we cut that? Is it supposed to be gone?
Yes.
No, I mean, I have it because Teba wants to rewrite it. She has some other things that she wants to say. Yeah. Something to do with Solange, actually, that she wants to re-articulate. So, yeah, she hasn't sent it. But I found myself in a very similar position that I think my mother must have been in when I asked my mother, where should I send this letter to Billie Jean King? Right. And my mother said, oh, just send it to Hilton Head Island.
Just with no name, or you with know, her and name I was and like, Hilton Head,
yeah, Billie Jean King, Hilton Head Island. Is that North Carolina, South Carolina? I don't even know. And I was like, but Mom, that's not an address. But the thing is, Teba was like, can you find out what Beyonce's address is? And I was like, God damn, I don't. You know, I can look it up on the internet. And
I'm sure there's like a fan club address.
Beyonce. There are, you know, it's her agent or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's like a big my heart was just also really wanting for that letter to really end up in Beyonce's hands. Yeah.
You okay. make these cast lists that are laser cut.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a passion about like certain like
circles
famous people? Like are you obsessive about it at all,
like a kind of like People magazine-y kind of,
not just as a whole, but like are there any people like Billie Jean King or like, you know, whoever, where you're like they're really like your top
you people? Know I'm
where
not
you, like lose your shit if you saw them like that kind
no
of thing,
I don't or... think I'm like that big a fan. Like in that way that certain fans are like extremely knowledgeable, that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
I am not like that. No. I mean, I probably kind of was about Leonora Carrington at a certain point right. in time. Yeah. I can't that. So I don't feel like I have a good answer to the question that you're not really asking, but that I think you're kind of hinting at, which has to do with like, what is my relationship with really famous people? Or
just like, are you obsessive?
Oh, isn't everybody a little obsessive about something? But I know, I don't think I am. I think I do wonder whether I feel like I am always sort of narrating everything as a movie, though. I am.
Like in your life experience?
Uh-huh. I mean, I think I'm often casting people, either the people that I know, I'm casting them with actors, or I'm imagining half my day as a movie, and I'm already also putting the people that were living that day with me, I'm giving them actors to play them or something. I don't really... go ahead.
Who have you cast for yourself?
Does it change?
I'm sure it changes.
Oh. Would you like me to read the list at the back of the book?
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, this is like people to play. Like all of these cast lists that are in the book called Hello, Leonora Soy Ann Walsh. All of these 13 cast lists, there's nobody that's specifically cast to play any one part. Like a cast is kind of a party. A cast is a set of possibilities. Mm-hmm. And these people might all play the same role, or they, you know, that's something I talk about a lot in here in this book. It's hard to say it as good as I wrote it. But I mean, so nobody was ever like, oh yeah, this is Marion Leatherby and this is, you know, all these other ladies. It's just, there's just, so the last cast list is like, okay, well, if Hello Leonora is the new book that needs an adaptation in film, mm-hmm. this is the cast for that book. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, everybody on here should basically be able to play me, mm-hmm. but they're also playing, I don't know. Yeah. So the
Julia Brian Wilson.
Yeah, Julia Brian Wilson. She's on here. Yeah, Claudia. I mean, so the people who, some of the people who wrote for the book are in this cast.
Oh, wow.
I mean, who would play me? I don't know. I mean, I'm embarrassed.
You should read the whole thing and then we can imagine.
Okay, Moira Davey, Sharon Hayes, Susan Howe, Jeff Kaplan, Cecilia Vicuña, Clement Goldberg, Vincent Fecteau, Frances McDormand, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Robin Cost Lewis, Jamie Lee Curtis, Claudia LaRocco, Toni Collette, Julia Brian Wilson, Teba Kubik Walsh, Akwi Akpakwasili, Kristen Lucas. You know, why do I always get compared to certain actors? If look at what they have in common, their foreheads and their teeth.
Are your casts always people that are living?
No, some of them are very, very dead even. Okay. Yeah.
I was just wondering. It's like all
and some
kinds.
Of them are, and some of them
like
are not even.
I feel like sometimes a real random.
Some of them
will be
are not it. Even like Peppermint Patty.
Yeah,
is,
I'm sorry. Hello Kitty. I mean.
Yeah, I mean that list is kind of also one of my favorites because it's so many alliterations.
Should you read that one too then? Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Shelley Duvall, Dolly Parton, Parker Posey. Peppermint Patty, Patty Hearst, Hello Kitty, Hello Leonora, Harmony Hammond, Hannah Hoch, Carol Burnett, Kathy Bates, Emma Goldman, June Jordan, Mariel Hemingway, Christy McNichol, Philip K. Dick, Frank Infurter.
Hell yeah.
I mean, there's also...
That's a great one.
That is a good one. I mean, they're really...
I would go to that after party.
There are a lot of lesbian, you know... girlhood and young womanhood lesbian heroes.
Oh yeah.
And many
Emma
of
Goldman.
These lists. Yeah.
Kick-ass old lady.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how certain people are like always remembered as old?
Yes. Well, because of the pictures of her. And like she had a pince-nez, I feel like, even when she was young. And that
okay.
seems like such an old thing.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. You're also a professor at UC Berkeley over in the art department. And you work with a lot of graduate students. Is that correct?
And undergrads.
Yeah.
Both.
But when you do with the graduate students, do you have studio visits?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how do you do that?
First of all, it's like a highlight of the job for sure. I would say one of the highlights of my job is that doing studio visits. God, like... process? What's my process?
Yeah, or like, what do you think it is? What is your job as a teacher in those situations, do you think? I just had 479,000 studio visits. I was at a residency where I did all these studio visits. I also do studio visits because I teach at SFAI, and sometimes I got to do studio visits. I feel like I suck at them.
I doubt that very much. Why?
I don't know. I just feel like I go in and I don't want to be like, this is good and this is bad and do this and don't do this.
Oh.
You know, I don't know. I just feel like, how do I know what's good or bad?
Well, I don't think it's ever about a judgment of good or bad.
Yeah.
Like, so, cause I agree. That's a dead end. I don't think you get anything from that. And I don't think the student gets anything from that. If what you're trying to figure out is the good or the bad, mm-hmm. I guess, God, I feel like I do a lot of listening.
Yeah, okay. I actually
do a lot of listening and I think initially I try to find out what people are excited about. Mm. Like what's making them feel like breathing and getting up in the morning. And I guess I keep thinking about how studio visits are often about trying to figure out how to position yourself so that you provide the best, most useful possible mirror mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, and your mirror will always be like, you know, a smoky mirror or a bendy mirror. It's your particular knowledge and taste and all the associations you bring that are part of what you reflect to that, or you know what gets reflected back. But I don't know, I lost track of that metaphor, but anyway, there's some combination of like the questions and the way the questions themselves produce, like the answers that they give are sort of the answers that they're already looking for anyway. Do you know what I mean by that?
Kind of.
I mean, I you know, one can, it's like, it's so, it seems to me like it's the worst cliche of studio visits to walk in and tell them that what you're seeing reminds them of. Oh, you should look at the work of, you know, because what you're seeing reminds you of something you already know. And like, I that's like a reflex that I think one should curb most of the time.
Okay.
At least I try to hold that stuff back for, because it seems easy.
That's such a common thing people do, though.
Yeah. But
do you give other things, like if someone's doing something about like some scientific thing, you could like send them like, hey, I found this scientific article that relates to the research you're doing.
Oh, I mean, I will. Yeah. If I come across it. But I do sort of think it's their job to do the digging, not mine. it's easy to feel really insecure in that situation when you're, especially when you feel you're out of your league and the work is not really super close to what you're used to thinking about, and you know, to feel like, oh my God, I don't know what to say at all.
Which is like most work, I feel like.
Do you?
Like, especially when you're working, like, if you're, like, research-based and your thing, it's, like, so specific what it is that you're interested in. And then, like, going to talk to someone who's making, like, abstract paintings or something that doesn't necessarily have, like, any kind of, like, a historical or some other kind of content to it.
Yeah.
That shit is hard.
It is, but I guess I just sort of feel like, well, I'm just one human. I'm just one human among all the many other humans that are going to look at this work. But I'm in this privileged moment of being asked to respond. The pressure to feel useful and knowledgeable is huge.
And like philosophical and like a wizard.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like you're expected to be a wizard?
That and so many other things. Mm-hmm.
Therapist, mm-hmm. nurse, maid.
Oracle.
Yes.
Yeah. Wise man, mm-hmm. you know, seer, yes. like you said.
Mm-hmm. Clairvoyant.
Empath. And also just like director, tell me what to do.
Yes.
And the thing is that you shouldn't do any of that. I don't think that's being a good teacher if you go for that. Okay. Or at least I don't really feel like very good about myself when I try to take that mm-hmm. role.
Have you had times where you walk out of a studio visit and you're like, damn, that went great?
Yeah. But I think it's just because I feel like I had such a good time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like we had a really fun conversation, or that we were thinking together.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
I like that vibe.
You know, yeah. Like that we had a little mind meld and we both thought thoughts that we hadn't thought before, mm-hmm. you know, and that the work got us there somehow. Like, I think that's when I feel that way, is just like, that was a pleasure for me to think about. Mm-hmm. It was a pleasure for me to try to find words. And I hope that is how I hope that that's how that other person felt. I mean, you just came back from having a lot of visits with people that you don't know.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, really hard. That's much harder than like when you have a student that you see once a month for 2 years. That's an ongoing conversation. That's really, you're just going back to, and it's, you're picking it up, and it's just, that's such a, it's like a little bit like having a friend in the studio that you're both working side by side, and that, you know. But I do agree, like when I do gigs where I have to walk in and be a studio advisor, I mean, the whole thing is so, it's like a fable or something. You know, it's like,
yeah.
It's like King Midas or something. You're just like, who gave me this fucking wand, mm-hmm. you know, microphone / you know, power to make or break your entire next week, month, right. year, whatever, you know? But on the other hand, like, if you think about the times that you have visitor, like when I think about my graduate school, like I feel like some of the best moments in my grad school were the visitors who dropped in, and I only ever saw them once.
I really appreciate that you talked about like the stresses that you go through being like doing studio visits.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I feel similarly. I feel nervous. I like, are we going to get along? Am I going to have something to say? There's like all this kind of stuff that you think about before you show up. So it's nice to know I'm not the only one, but it also sort of like brings down, like, you know, down to earth, like our role also as people doing studio visits. It's, you're not like this King Midas person, nor do I ever want to be. Like, that's definitely not, but there for some reason feels like there's that pressure for some reason. I don't know.
To just be like, I get it.
Or just to be like, you have like the most important thing to say, and it's sort of like, meh. There's just a lot of pressure, I think.
I mean, I think that comes from a totally overvalued hierarchical structure to this art culture thing. And when I think of it as a kind of exchange of energy with another person, it's so much easier.
Do you believe in ghosts? In terms of the undead walking the earth? Or the spirits of the past, the spirits of those who have died.
I'm trying to find the right verb to replace believe and the right noun to replace ghosts.
Do you think about fish?
I think about fish. Mm-hmm. I do.
Which one specifically?
I think I recognize that fish are living amongst us. Yes, I do. I do.
Are you still following?
That's wild. Wait, no? Okay.
So replace the word believe with think.
Okay.
And the word, replace the word ghost with fish.
But wait, are we still talking about ghosts now?
We are.
Yes. Oh,
okay.
I'm like, uh-oh.
But are we still talking about, but okay.
I think.
Sorry, guys.
I mean, I think reason why I want to get rid of the word believe is because I don't think about the continuation of life beyond the body or prior to the body, the human body, mm-hmm. as a matter of belief, as a matter of faith or belief. I take it as a given that life is continuous, pre and post inhabiting a human body. So yes.
While maintaining your own like individual personality or one's own.
Yeah, I mean, I think I am a spirit. I think Anne Walsh Jr. is a spirit inhabiting a body. Yes. And that spirit, I don't know where that spirit was before they were in my body, and I don't know where they'll be after they're in my body, but I do think that they will continue beyond my body. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. And me too then?
Yes, all of us.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. What do you believe?
I don't know.
And why did you ask me that question?
I just wanted to know.
Oh. Okay.
We always like to ask our interviewees at the end of an interview if there's anything else you would like listeners to know.
Well, you know how like football players say, you know, hi, mom. You know, I want to say hi, Tebby.
And as always, congratulations.